Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
This podcast is supported by Cartier. In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, Cartier shares testaments of love in all its forms from around the world. Please keep listening for today's love story later in this episode.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. There's something wonderful about sharing your favorite books with the person you're falling in love with. And Carla Darris was a longtime book lover with a lot of favorites. But she also had a secret. Uzo Aduba reads Carla's essay, How Bibliophiles Flirt. She stars in Mrs. America on FX on Hulu, which premieres on April 15th. You might also know her from her Emmy Award-winning performance as Suzanne Crazy Eyes Warren in Orange is the New Black.
During 6 years of singlehood in my 20s, I became a person I did not know. Before, I had always been a reader. I walked to the library several times a week as a kid and stayed up late into the night reading under my blankets with a flashlight. I checked out so many books and returned them so quickly, the librarian once snapped, "Don't take home so many books if you're not going to read them all." But I did read them all, I said, unloading them into her arms. I was an English major in college and went on to get a master's in literature. But shortly after the spiral-bound thesis took its place on my shelf next to the degree, I stopped reading. It happened gradually, the way one heals or dies. When I created my OkCupid profile, screen name, Miss Bibliophile 52598, I filled out the favorite books section, letting my taste in literature speak for me. 100 Years of Solitude, A Movable Feast, White Teeth, The Namesake, The Known World, The God of Small Things, How to Read the Air. But a twinge of panic surged through me when I realized it had been more than 2 years since I had read most of those titles, and more than 5 years for some. Despite my track record, I tried to maintain my bookish persona. I joined book clubs on meetup.com that I never attended. I requested the library copy of Kazuo Ishiguro's Never Let Me Go because everyone else was reading it, only to return it a week late, unread, with fines. I still loved the idea of reading. I treasured books and bookstores. Whenever I found one, I would linger between the shelves for hours as if catching up with old friends, picking out volumes I had read and buying new ones I hadn't. When my father's girlfriend gave me a book by Joel Osteen for Christmas, I returned it for Toni Morrison's A Mercy. I also bought a collection of short stories by Dostoevsky, but I didn't read either of them. David was my first OkCupid date, my first online date of any kind. He was tall and nice, if awkward. I asked him question after question to keep him at ease and the conversation flowing, but also to deflect his attention, a classic introvert trick. His profile said he liked to read, so I asked him about his last book. His face lit up and his fingers danced. I realized within the first several weeks that David read much more than I did, about a book or two a week. We seemed an unlikely couple. Me, a 5'3" black woman born to a Caribbean mother, and him, a 6'4" white guy from Ohio. But as we got to know each other, our shared faith and mutual love of books bridged our gaps. The first time David visited my house, we compared libraries. We only had 4 titles in common, 2 of which were C.S. Lewis collections. David preferred history and nonfiction, whereas I gravitated toward fiction writers of color and immigrant narratives. Months later, when we began to discuss the possibility of getting married one day, I didn't broach the subject of combining our libraries, not because I feared having to untangle them someday, but because I liked having my own stories to share. On our 7th date, David and I visited the Central Library downtown. "I have a game," he said, pulling 2 pens and pads of sticky notes out of his bag. "Let's find books we've read and leave reviews in them for the next person." We wandered through the aisles for over an hour. In the end, we sat on the floor among the poetry, and I read him some of Linda Paston's verse. He listened, his head tilted down, his chin pressed into his chest, and then he asked, "What is it you like about that one?" That spring, as we picnicked outside, I said, "If I tell you something, will you not judge me?" David paused from listing the titles he planned to read over the summer and raised his eyebrows. "I've only read 1 book this year," I said. "I started 3 others, but just haven't finished them." "But it's June," he said. "I know." "1 book?" "I know." "But you like books," he said. "You like bookstores. You like libraries. Is it a deal breaker?" "No, but still, read a book." I was painfully aware of the glaring hypocrisy in my life. I defended the virtues of bookstores in the age of online retailing and bought books whenever I got the chance, but I hardly read them. They sat on every surface until my house appeared to wear books the way one wears clothes. They piled up on chairs and draped across sofa arms. The Japanese language has a word for this, sundoku. The act of acquiring books that go unread. The shelves of my bookcase sag in the middle, and not just because it's made of cheap plywood. It's because each shelf holds 2 rows of books, an inner and an outer. If I want to find a book from college or before, I know to reach back to the inner row. If I want a more recent edition, I look along the edge. Surrounding the bookshelf are stacks containing different categories of books. There are books I have read, books I want to read, books I started but did not finish because I did not like them, books I started and loved but could not justify reading given their graphic, sexual, or violent content. That category contains 2 books by Philip Roth. The last time I visited a dollar bookstore, I bought 5 titles for myself and 2 for David. His charge to read a book echoed in my head. One afternoon, I picked up one of the dollar hardbacks I bought solely for its poetic title. I had a hard time getting into it. The narrator was supposed to be an old man, but sounded more like what a young woman thought an old man might sound like. Whenever I was tempted to give up on it, I thought of David. He had just started reading Infinite Jest. I pushed through the first 2 chapters and discovered a new narrator on the 3rd. I loved the alternating points of view. I carried the book to work and read at lunch. I read on my walk home, occasionally lifting my eyes to make sure I avoided strangers and uneven concrete. I felt smug that while most of my millennial peers also walked with their heads down, eyes hovering just above their palms, I was not merely scrolling through Instagram. I was reading. Reading a book. "How's your day?" he texted. "Good. A little tired," I replied. I stayed up late reading and finished my book. I tried to slip it in casually, but I was proud of myself. The last time I pulled an all-nighter to read, I was 12, and the book was Little Women. It was not a competition, but there was a push. I felt him pushing me to be more of the person I used to be and more of who I wanted to be. Whenever he turned to discussing his current nonfiction book about the rise of Silicon Valley or environmental philosophers, I would tell him of fiction, of men who left their countries by hiding in boxes only to climb out and turn into birds. I would remind him that sometimes the only way to explain the world we live in is to make it all up. I asked David once what he liked about me. He paused and said, "You make me less cynical. I see the world as a more wonderful place with you." A little over a year after our date at the library, David suggested we visit again. As we walked along the shelves, he asked if I remembered the game we played on our first visit, when we put post-it note reviews in our favorite books. "I remember," I said. He pulled a book from the shelf, dropped to one knee, and opened it. Inside, his post-it read, "Carla, it has always been you. Will you marry me?" His proposal had rested between the pages of The Rebel Princess for over a year. "Yes," I said, "I'll marry you." We embraced in the middle of the fiction aisle, surrounded by other people's stories and about to begin our own.
That's Uzo Aduba reading Carla Darris's essay, How Bibliophiles Flirt. We'll catch up with Carla after the break.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
So we had to know, how did that post-it note stay in the same library book for an entire year? Carla Darris told us how David made sure it stayed safe.
So he says that he put it in there that seventh date, that day we were walking around, and it just stayed in that book for over a year. And he would go back periodically to check on it. And if you're familiar with LA, it was the downtown Central Library, and we both lived near Santa Monica at the time. So he would drive down and check on the post-it note in the book to make sure it was still there.
That's about a 20-minute drive with no traffic. And Carla says that she eventually got her hands on that copy of The Rebel Princess.
I actually, after he proposed, I went and I asked if I could buy the book so I could keep it, and they told me that I could not. So I checked it out, and then I just never returned it, and I ended up paying $50 in fines, but it's now on my bookshelf.
Carla and David got married in April of 2018, and just this past December, they welcomed a baby son, Noah.
And it has been amazing. Obviously, the first few weeks are just kind of haywire and you're tired. But he's also just amazing. And we're in that stage where we think he's just the most amazing baby in the history of babies. We're just both very enamored.
And as you heard, Noah did join Carla in the studio.
He is here. He seems very fascinated by all of the goings-on.
Despite having a newborn, Carla is still reading.
I thought I wouldn't have time to read with a new baby, but a lot of my reading has been happening lately in the wee hours of the morning in between feedings. So he'll wake up to eat, and sometimes they say to sleep when the baby sleeps, but you can't always get back to sleep, or there's just not enough time in between. So I've been using that time to read, and I've gotten a few good books in so far this year.
Recently, she's read Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reed and Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson, which she recommends. And she has a little advice for listeners.
Read a book, in the words of David. And I really like the idea that comes through in the piece that when I was with David, I felt a push to be either a better version of myself or a version that I knew existed that I wanted to go back to. And just that idea that we should push each other to be our best versions. And that could be in our habits or like emotionally, spiritually, but kind of finding other people, whether it's a romantic relationship or not, who do that for you.
That's Carla Darris and her son, Noah. They live in Los Angeles. Carla is on maternity leave right now, and she works as an executive assistant in marketing and events. You can see pictures of her, David, and baby Noah at wbur.org/modernlove.
Bye-bye.
More after the break.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Actress Uzo Aduba told us why she wanted to read this piece.
I chose this essay because I could totally relate to Carla. I love to read, then definitely had this huge chapter in my life where I was getting all these books and would be filling all of my bookshelves with them and would discuss books on dates, but hadn't myself really been reading for a long time. And I felt like a fraud because even though I had read the books that I was, you know, recommending, it had been years since I had read those books. I do read again now, but I don't read anywhere near as much as I would want to or like to. I mean, I'm not down to one book a year, but I am not reading anywhere near as much as I used to read. I used to read, I think, 2-3 books a month. And now it's like, I probably read one book a month.
And Uzo recommends Homegoing by Yaa Jessie. Thanks to Uzo Aduba for reading this week's essay. You can see her in Mrs. America on FX on Hulu on April 15th. And here's Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times.
What I love about Carla's essay, besides the whole sort of book nerd angle, which I'm a natural for, is this idea that people who love us and who sort of seek us out often see the best in us and see who we really are. And in this case, like, remind us of who we really are and what we love. And it's just so sweet how he sort of brings her back to the kind of person she loves about herself. And there's something universal in that and true and kind of admirable as a testament to what love is. And then the cherry on top is to have a proposal on a post-it note in a book What a great ending.
Modern Love is a production of the New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. Iris Adler is our executive producer. We were edited this week by Catherine Brewer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Special thanks to Julia Simon, Anya Stremian, and Mia Lee at the New York Times. Additional music courtesy of APM. If you like the show, leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps new listeners find us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.